So is the sound okay? Sometimes over on this side, it's a dead zone. So can you guys hear me over here? Okay. And everybody else can hear me? There's a list, one of the lists of the Buddha's many famous lists. He was prone to categorizing and organizing things into lists. And one of the lists I'd like to talk about a little bit tonight. The list is, the name of the list is the Paramis. And it stands for perfection. It's the set of qualities that we cultivate, that we develop, that we perfect as we travel this path, as we engage in this practice of waking up. And there are 10 qualities in this list. They are generosity, virtue, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, loving kindness, determination, and equanimity. So these qualities are qualities that we cultivate. They're a prescriptive part of our practice. They're qualities we look at and cultivate in our minds. These are mental qualities, and we look at those and cultivate them in our lives. But they're also descriptive. These qualities are the qualities that describe an awakened heart, an awakened mind. And partly that's why they're called the paramis, or the perfections. These qualities are said to be perfected in someone who is awake. So the traditional role of these qualities in Asian Buddhist countries is that these are the qualities that people work on in their daily lives. This is the set of qualities that people cultivate in their day-to-day activities. So this is a very relevant set of qualities for us to consider, because we are all lay people practicing in our daily lives as well as in meditation practice. So it's a very useful set of qualities to consider. And typically, in Asian countries, lay people go on retreat in Burmese, in Burma, in Thailand, as well as in this country. And the monks encourage the lay people to practice their meditation during the retreat. But then when they go home, they encourage them to work on these qualities. So they're very useful qualities to work on, to cultivate. Tonight, I'd really like to focus on one of the qualities that's right in the middle of the list, the energy parami, the perfection of energy. So this list of paramis is sort of in an ordered fashion. I mean, they're cultivated. You can't really separate them. When you cultivate one of them, you're often cultivating several of the others at the same time. But there is kind of an ordering, a little bit of an ordering to the list. And so it's sometimes interesting to look at what qualities precede and follow the quality that you're interested in studying or looking at. So looking at energy tonight, it fits between wisdom and patience. Wisdom cultivates the perfection of energy, of wisdom leads to the cultivation of energy. The perfection of energy leads to the cultivation of patience. So I think that energy following wisdom is a really important point here. Because energy itself, if we just think about energy and what it means to us, what it is, it's a pretty neutral quality. It's simply an engagement in activity. It's that movement to do. So it's pretty neutral. And the same quality of energy underlies states like ambition, aggression, violence, And the same state underlies compassion. That quality of energy, the same kind of energy underlies compassion, equanimity, loving kindness, truthfulness. So it's really important in terms of this quality within our practice to recognize that it is a quality of energy that is infused with wisdom, infused with the wisdom to act skillfully in our lives, to act hopefully out of loving kindness, out of generosity, out of compassion, out of truthfulness, as opposed to out of aggression, out of anger, out of violence. So this to me points to the fact that this wisdom needs to infuse the energy in order for it to be effective in our practice. One of the commentaries about this particular list is called the Treatise on the Paramis. Let's say it was written in about 300 AD, I think. Fairly technical treatise. But one line in there I really liked about energy. It says, "It is entirely through the spiritual power of energy that the practice of all the requisites of enlightenment succeeds." So that points to how crucial it is in our practice. Energy, the power of energy, is what allows us to wake up. It's what allows us to pay attention and to cultivate loving kindness, generosity, compassion. It's at the root, essentially, of all of these other qualities that I'm talking about. So in this context, the quality of energy is related to the energy towards practice, the energy towards waking up, the energy towards mindfulness and awareness. And the definition of this term, the Pali term for this word, is wirya, and it's often translated in several different ways. It's translated as energy. It's translated as zeal. And another way that it's translated is as courage. And I like this definition because this practice does take courage. It takes a courage to be able to face what we are experiencing in the moment. Sometimes it takes a courage to face our depression, to face our self-hatred, to face our anger, to face our aggression. Sometimes it takes courage to face our happiness and our joy. So I like this translation. It just serves to remind us that this practice, the making of that effort requires a bit of courage. So this quality of energy is it's a pretty important quality in the teachings. It appears on more of the lists than any other quality. It appears on, I think, 6 or 7 of the lists, and no other quality of mind, even mindfulness, appears on fewer lists than energy. So it appears on a list called the 7 Factors of Awakening, the qualities of mindfulness, investigation, energy, rapture, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. It appears on the list of the 5 spiritual faculties. And again, most of these lists are somewhat ordered. Faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, wisdom. It appears on the list of the paramis. It appears on a list called the basis of spiritual power. Those are desire, energy, mind, and investigation. And it also appears kind of tangentially, to some extent, on the Eightfold Path, the factor of right effort. So there's often, I want to highlight this, the notion of right effort, because there's often a conflation of the terms effort and energy. And I want to distinguish them. They're not exactly the same. They're different terms in these texts, and they have a slightly different meaning. So I hope during this talk you'll get a sense of what I mean. And this is kind of a crucial area of what I want to cover tonight, is effort and energy and how they're related and how they balance each other. So right effort, the definition of right effort is, it's kind of a complex, sounds a little funny, but there's four parts to right effort. They are the effort to cultivate wholesome states that have not yet arisen. So that's qualities like loving kindness, compassion, generosity, happiness, joy, equanimity, tranquility, cultivating those states, finding ways to cultivate those states when they're not currently present. There's the effort to maintain those states when they have arisen. And then there's the kind of the flip side of those two, is the effort to abandon unwholesome states that have arisen, which is qualities like anger, aversion, greed, aggression, frustration, any qualities generally that are motivated out of greed, aversion, and delusion. And then the fourth one is the one that is usually the most convoluted, the effort to avoid the arising of unwholesome states that have not arisen. Three negatives in that sentence. So basically, I mean, just to make this simple, it's knowing what gets us into trouble and not going there. So, you know, we suppose we know that having a certain kind of conversation with a friend always leads to an argument. So knowing that, we can avoid having that kind of, we can avoid getting into that situation. We can be on our guard to just not take the conversation in that area, or to keep the conversation short, or not engage in it if we know that we're going to get into an argument. So that's what that last one means. It's really a pretty basic thing. It's learning from our mistakes, essentially, knowing what gets us into trouble and avoiding it. So those are the that's the definition of right effort. And it's I feel, subtly different than energy. Effort is something that we do. And energy is a quality of, it's basically the quality that arises based on effort. When we, if you think about what energy feels like, when you feel energized, when you feel energetic, it's just a state in the body. It's not something that we're doing. So it's just a state in the body. And for a long time, I was a little confused about these two teachings and hearing some teachers say that they were the same thing. And I actually found a place in the suttas, in the Buddhist texts, where it clearly distinguishes between them and it defines the relationship between them. It says that energy is that mental quality that results from making right effort. So they're connected. They're very intimately connected. Energy results from making effort. There's also another teaching in the suttas about energy that I like. It's a teaching about cultivating or balancing, really balancing energy. And in this sutta, there's a monk that has been engaging in practice very vigorously. And he even says to himself, I'm one of the most dedicated, energetic monks around. How come I haven't gotten enlightened yet? And he's really going for it. He's really engaging and striving and practicing all the time, trying to become awakened. And the Buddha, this is some of the mythical elements of the suttas. The Buddha, in his all-seeing mind, noticed that he was struggling and appeared in front of him and said, Sonya, when you were a lay person, did you play the lute? And Sonia said, yes, I did. And he said, well, when the strings were too tight, did the lute make good music? And he said, no. And he said, well, when the strings were too loose, did it make good music? No. When it was tuned just right, did it make good music? Yes. He said, in the same way, we have to take care that our energy is neither too tight nor too loose. When it's too tight, it will lead to restlessness and agitation. When it's too loose, it will lead to sleepiness and dullness. And right in the middle is where we can find that balance. So this is knowing that energy and effort are related, we can use effort to tune or balance our energy. If we find that we're agitated or restless, we can relax a bit, let go of making effort. Just let go, relax, and just see what happens if we just let go a little bit. If we're feeling dull or sleepy, we can add a little bit of effort to the equation. We get confused at times. We think that we need energy in order to make effort. Often that's the way we think about it. That if we have energy, we can make effort. So if we're not energetic, then we can't make effort. But actually, effort creates energy. So if you're feeling dull and sleepy in your meditation, making a little bit of effort to connect. It doesn't have to be a strong, strenuous effort, but just a little bit of effort to connect can wake us up. If we're feeling agitated, we need to reduce the effort. We've been probably trying a little too hard, working a little bit too hard. So knowing what we're experiencing and tuning our effort to meet the situation. So in terms of balancing effort, in terms of creating an ease of effort, I think often in our culture, we tend to over-effort. That tends to be our culture, that we're a striving culture. We do a lot. We feel like we need to accomplish things and organize things and get things done. So that's the habit. We think we learn that we can accomplish things through activity. And that's the motivation and the energy that we bring to our meditation practice as well. I'm going to do this. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to do this. So we tend to, I think, in general, be a little bit on the over-efforting side of things. So it can really help to relax. Really help to relax in the meditation practice. Spend quite a bit of time at the beginning, like I did tonight, encouraging you to relax. Relax your body, relax your mind, and then use a kind of an ease of effort. It's actually not very hard to be mindful. How hard is it to hear the bell? It happens. It just happens. It doesn't take a lot of effort or energy to be mindful for a split second. If you remember it, it happens for a moment. What's hard to do is to sustain it over time. So it comes and goes very quickly. We're mindful for a split second, and then whatever we were mindful of, whatever came into our attention, we start thinking about it. Oh, the bell. Oh, what a lovely bell. I'd really like to have one of those bells. I wonder where I can get one. So we start thinking about what we've experienced. So we go from a moment of mindfulness into a bunch of thinking about it. So what's hard to do is to sustain that awareness, sustain that mindfulness over time. But it's actually best to not think about sustaining it for a long period of time. You know, if we sit down, and we think we're going to try to be mindful for 45 minutes or for 30 minutes when we're doing the meditation, we're probably going to get lost. You know, it's going to create a... It's like we sit down and we try to be mindful for all 30 minutes right in the first minute of the sitting. You know, we try to do that. We think, okay, I'm going to do this. But it doesn't quite work that way. It's most helpful to make the effort needed for a very short time and then just do it again. Do it over and over and over and over and over and over again. So little bits, short moments. And just keep reminding yourself to be mindful. So that's actually the root of the word mindfulness. The Pali word mindfulness is sati. And the root of that word means to remember. It's based in the word for memory. So that's what mindfulness is about, remembering to stay present, remembering over and over again. So short moments many times. Joseph Goldstein likes to give what he calls the secret teaching of the meditation practice. He says that, you know, people think that the teaching that we give, there's got to be some secret special teaching that will unlock it for us. And he said, well, this is it. So this is the special teaching. This is the secret teaching. I'm going to give it to you right now. You only make as much effort as you need to pay attention to a half a breath, the in-breath. That's it. That's all you have to do. Pay attention to half a breath. Can you do that right now? And then when that half breath ends, you remind yourself to pay attention to the next half breath. In, out. So you don't have to make a lot of effort. You just have to keep doing it. It's not hard in a moment to pay attention to an in-breath right now. How hard is that? It's actually quite light. That's the level of effort we want to make in our practice, that lightness. It just has to be that light done over and over and over and over again. Sometimes I like to think about when I find myself in a state where feel like I'm making too much effort. Sometimes the mind gets into a state where it's just making effort. And it's almost like I'm not even doing it. It's like a habit that I have, that the effort comes. And sometimes I think about, well, how little effort do I actually need right now to be present? So, you know, kind of letting go of making effort. Letting go, letting go, letting go. And seeing that the mind actually stays pretty present as we let go of trying. And then at some point the mind will wander and, okay, let's bring back a little bit of effort then. But it's actually surprising to me sometimes how much I can let go of effort and stay mindful, stay present. So it doesn't take a lot of doing. It just takes it, you know, that just remind yourself, be present. Be present. Over and over and over again. Sometimes I find it helpful also to really consciously remind myself after each half breath to pay attention. So have it just be in, and then okay, now out. You know, just know that the out is coming and remind myself to pay attention to it. At some point that will get to be too much effort. And you'll find that you don't have to remind yourself so much, that you can just forget about reminding yourself for a while, and then, you know, just every now and then recollect to bring yourself back. So you need to monitor this. This is not that level of effort to keep reminding yourself. And that's actually what effort is. It's the continual remembering. It's not any kind of a straining. That's, I think, another misnomer that we have about effort. When we think of making a lot of effort, we think of engaging many muscles. And we think about picking up something heavy. And that takes more effort than picking up something light. And in this practice, it's only ever something very light. It just has to be done over and over and over again. So there's no need to really be more effortful. It's just more about the frequency and how often you remind yourself to pay attention. Making less effort means being less vigilant, being less frequent in the recollection. And making more effort means being more vigilant, reminding yourself every half breath. You can do this in walking meditation too. Some of you may not have done the walking practice yet, but we do a formal walking practice sometimes, especially on day-long retreats or retreats. It's a help to balance the energy and also gives our body a break from sitting meditation. We do back and forth walking meditation. And I use the same trick in walking practice when I find my mind is very scattered and I'm not able to stay with the walking. I'll pick something on the floor or on the path that I can see about 3 feet out. And I'll, you know, make it my goal to get to that place mindfully. And then I'll pick another spot on the floor and make it my goal to get to that place mindfully. And it kind of just like pulling myself along in this rope, you know, staying present through this simple act of just, can I stay present until there? I mean, that's not very long. Can I do that? Can I do that? Another helpful tip around balancing effort is simply to make the best effort you can given the circumstances. At one point on a retreat, I was noticing there were times of day when it was really hard to meditate. After lunch, for instance, you know, I was always falling asleep. Just having these lulls in the day, the energy would drop. And I went to my teacher and I said, what do I do about this? You know, I can't practice at these times. And he says, just make the best effort you can. Simply do the best that you can. And at some point, the energy, the conditions will change and the energy will come back. And the effort that you've made in that time will actually support the energy coming back. So if you give up, if you abandon the effort, and maybe some of you have noticed this even in your daily lives, if you get stuck in a pattern of kind of being slothful, you know, oh, I'll just rest this morning and then I'll go out this afternoon and exercise. And by the afternoon you think, oh, I don't want to go out and exercise. And, you know, so we kind of get stuck in these patterns of sloth, and it takes a little bit of doing, of effort to break ourselves out of them. And it's kind of similar in the meditation practice. When we have those lulls, it's not so helpful to give up completely just because we're tired. But it's not helpful also to try to over-effort at that time either. Just do what you can. Make the best effort you can in that time. So how do we cultivate energy? I mean, the main way really is through this practice of effort. There's not really a practice for cultivating energy like there is for cultivating metta or loving kindness. If we want to cultivate the quality of loving kindness, there's a specific practice that we can do. Or if we want to cultivate generosity, there are certain things that we can do to engage in acts of generosity and noticing how we respond to generosity. Well, energy is a little different than that, because really energy is cultivated in the act of cultivating other qualities. So we cultivate loving kindness and energy is cultivated with that. And we cultivate generosity and energy is cultivated with that. And that's the looking at the definition of right effort, that's essentially what it's saying. We make the effort to arouse wholesome states that have not arisen. So we make the effort to cultivate wholesome qualities, loving kindness, generosity, mindfulness, joy, peace, tranquility. We make that effort, and energy results from that. So there's not actually a specific practice on energy, but there is a way that we can look at things that support it. What supports the cultivation of energy? All of these qualities, everything that we experience is born of causes and conditions that come together. And so we can create conditions that will support the arising of energy. So some of those supporting conditions can be seen by looking at the lists that I talked about before. So, for instance, in the list of the paramis, wisdom. Wisdom leads to energy. And in the suttas, it says that wise attention leads to energy. So that's the connection, the wisdom, attention to wisdom. And wise attention results in this movement towards practice. It's kind of a result almost of the wise attention. It like bootstraps the energy to bring wise attention to our experience. Another main or kind of central supporting condition for energy is faith or confidence. Another term. Sometimes people, the term faith is a little difficult for people. And it's not faith in some external deity here that I'm talking about. It's faith in our ability to practice, basically. Confidence in our ability to engage in this practice. And that confidence can lead to this movement towards making effort, and which results in energy. When we're confident in a practice, when we feel that there's a way to engage that will help us to extricate ourselves from the ways that our mind gets us entwined, the habits and tendencies of our mind that we see over and over again lead us into all kinds of trouble, into suffering. When we begin to see that a certain practice or a certain technique helps us to work with those things in a skillful way, it gives us confidence, and it encourages us. We want to try it. We want to keep working at it. So it inspires us towards making that effort. So confidence in the practice helps to lead us to energy. Another quality that is very helpful in the meditation, that is a supporting condition for energy, is investigation. So this is from the seven factors of awakening. Mindfulness leads to investigation, leads to energy. So mindfulness, just the basic paying attention to things, leads us to this kind of exploring, investigating, what's going on here? That wise attention has us asking what's going on here, and we start to investigate our experience. So we investigate what's happening right here and now. That's what investigation means. It's not a mental thinking. The investigation is of our direct experience. What is actually happening right here in this very moment? What are the body sensations? What can we experience? As we do that, as we start to engage in investigation, often an interest will come up. There can be an interest in, wow, you know, when we start to look at our experience, it really opens up to a whole bunch of, it's like a new vista has opened up. There's a whole bunch of territory that we hadn't explored before when we start to investigate. And it can get interesting to start to look at it. We start to look more closely at our breath, for instance, paying attention to the very beginning of the in-breath. And then as we get closer to it, as the mind gets closer to it, we see it's a whole world of sensations, of change, of movement. It's almost like it's its own creature sometimes. It feels like it's something being born and evolving and living in us, that we're just observing this process. It can get very, very interesting. And when it gets interesting, it inspires us to pay attention. It inspires us to engage, to make that effort, which leads to the energy, which leads to further interest and attention. So it's really a kind of a positive feedback loop, this process. We engage a little bit, just a little bit. You don't have to do much initially. Pay a little bit of attention. And even if you don't feel like you're very interested, pretend like you're interested. Almost, you know, explore a little more closely. How do I know the in-breath has begun? How do I know that it ends? When does it end? Can you watch that? Can you see it? And if you do that for a little while, you'll start to see more, and the interest will start to kick in. So you can just even bootstrap it a little bit with a little bit of investigation. And this investigation is helpful in any experience. It's helpful with paying attention to difficult mind states, with paying attention to anger or aversion. What is it? What is this? If we can get interested in our experience enough to investigate it, we'll start to see, actually, it has many benefits. Not only does it give us energy, but it also gives us a different perspective on our experience. When we have this interest in exploring our experience, it's like we're looking at it from a different perspective. We're not tied up in the middle of it anymore. So that looking at it from a different perspective, it opens up some space around it. And we're observing it not as who we are, but just as an experience, just as something that's happening in this moment. And again, when we start to see the benefits, when we start to see that this shift of attention to just be curious about our experience, we see some benefits of that, and it gives us energy to continue the practice. So what are the results of cultivating energy? Again, looking back to the lists, we can look at the qualities that follow. Once we have, once the energy is engaged, we have a great deal of patience. This is from the Paramis. Patience follows energy. Once the energy is engaged, it allows us to just continue to pay attention to something in a very gentle, with a gentle form of persistence. That just kind of over and over again, come back, come back, come back. It begins to cultivate the quality of patience, our ability to just be with something that may be difficult. From the list of the spiritual faculties, after energy comes mindfulness and concentration. So with that energy, more mindfulness results, and the mental quality of concentration, where the mind gets still and quiet. Quite a lovely state of mind when the mind kind of settles in and doesn't struggle anymore to think or to run away from our present moment experience. It feels quite blissful, quite settled, quite lovely, peaceful feelings can be in the body when we get into this kind of concentrated state. And that's a result of making the effort and cultivating the energy. From the seven factors of awakening, the quality that follows energy is rapture. And that's actually the beginning of concentration. The initial stages of concentration can be this very uplifting, almost joyous experience. Sometimes it can feel like waves of pleasant, blissful sensation going through your body, a very delightful experience. Or it can feel like sparks or showering rain or just feeling like pervaded with this kind of bliss. So rapture results from energy. So again, energy is a pretty central quality. But again, it's kind of a mysterious one because it's not something we cultivate directly. But I wanted to just talk about it because there are ways to talk about it. And often it is misunderstood how to engage with energy and effort. But as I said before, it's entirely through the spiritual power of energy that the requisites for enlightenment succeed. So it's a very crucial quality of mind. It's crucial not only for the cultivation of these quality of the paramis, this list of 10 perfections that I talked about, but it's also crucial for the entire path. And if it's applied skillfully, it will lead us all the way to the cessation of suffering, to the place where we no longer are reacting to try to hold on to things that are going to disappear or try to push things away that we don't want, so that we're in balance with our experience. We're able to take in the happiness. It doesn't mean that we get flat or that we get unresponsive. In fact, it's just the opposite. We get extremely responsive and yet very balanced, very at ease with whatever is happening. Another interesting piece about this is that as we begin to let go of our clinging, of holding on to things, of wanting things to be different, as we allow things to be as they are, instead of resisting things as they are, resistance actually uses an incredible amount of energy. And that's one of the reasons why we get so exhausted a lot, because we spend so much time resisting what is actually happening. And when we let go of resistance to things as they are, an incredible amount of energy is freed up. And that, again, supports the entire awakening of our minds. It supports the further letting go of more clinging. Because we see actually, oh, I've got a lot more energy to deal with things if I'm not resisting them. So I think that's enough from me. And does anyone have any comments? We can have a few minutes of discussion if there's any comments or questions.
What you just said about resistance really hit home. It's like I'm the queen of resistance. It's like I'm like the dog on the leash that's like, you know, with all the... And how do you remember to not do that? It's like all my molecules do that. It's like it's almost a skeptical kind of stance. It's this knee-jerked reaction. It's like that.
Well, the first thing you have to do with resistance is not resist the resistance. So the first thing you have to do is make the determination that you'll wake up and notice resistance. So use that as something that you want to wake up for in your life, to notice it. Notice what it feels like. So really engage in the exploration, the investigation of the resistance itself. And you'll begin to see just how much energy it takes and just how unpleasant it is. And when you see it, when you're actually paying attention to it that way, there'll be moments when it just suddenly disappears for a second and then comes back. You know, it'll go away and it'll come back. And if you're paying attention, you'll see in that moment when it disappears how much more at ease you are and how much more relaxed things are. And the mind will learn from that. It will learn that, oh, there's another way. And so it's a slow process. So it takes persistence, but just that gentle kind of persistence. You know, it's not a trying to beat yourself into the resistance and say, okay, I'm really going to figure this out. It doesn't have to be that intense. It can be just like, okay, resistance is like this. Okay. It can be pretty light, but just to see if you can continue, you know, remembering to pay attention. So, but making that determination is helpful. You know, you asked, how can I remember? And when you're trying to engage in breaking a pattern like this, it really takes some resolve. And you have to do it slowly. And I've given this kind of, I've talked about this technique a lot, and I know some of you have heard this, probably many of you have heard this, but I'll talk about it again because it's so helpful. If you're trying to break a pattern or want to wake up for something particular, you want to, okay, I know I get angry all the time. I really want to learn about this. I want to be able to wake up from my anger or my resistance, whatever it is. You make that vow. You decide, okay, it's like a determination or resolve. That's what I'm going to pay attention to. I want to wake up when I'm feeling that way. I want it to be something that wakes me up. And initially it will take, I mean, you'll go through many bouts of resistance. You won't remember. And at some point you will remember, and you'll remember that you haven't remembered. And you might have an inclination to beat yourself up and say, I can't do this. Obviously, I can't do this. But that moment of remembering, that first moment of remembering, I've forgotten to do this, that's the first moment that it is actually beginning. So allow that to be a support. Oh, okay, I have actually remembered that I want to do this. And in that moment, since you are now remembering, you might as well pay attention to what's happening right now. And then again, make the resolve. I'm going to wake up for this pattern. With something like resistance, you might actually wake up in the midst of it because it can kind of feed itself. But it can get really tight or bound up, and when you first wake up to it, it's going to be pretty unpleasant, probably. So just allow it to, just however you can be present for it, just do that. And you may start to notice that you, what I noticed when I did this process around anger is that once I actually got to the point where I was noticing the anger, that over months I began to wake up in the process of anger earlier in the process. So initially I'd be in a full-blown rage when I started trying to pay attention to the anger. And then after a few months I began noticing I was more like just normally irritated or normally angry, not in a full-blown rage. So I could see that I was waking up earlier in the process. And then you may even begin to see that the triggers, the things that are starting the resistance out in the first place. So it's a huge process, and it's a huge learning field. So just engaging in the exploration of it, the investigation of that.
Thank you. So how about the energy you use from other things like investigation or practicing metta or anything more positive, mm-hmm. you know, versus resistance? How does that energy play into what you're talking about?
Well, the energy, I mean, basically when we have energy for practice, it just feeds back into the practice so that we essentially want to keep engaging. So that if we're practicing metta, if we're practicing loving kindness, and we're getting an energy out of that, it basically feeds back into the practice so that we continue it and that we can keep going. So it's just a cycle. It's like the linchpin of our practice, this energy. You know, it's the thing that makes it tick. So if we gain energy through the practice of metta, it adds the energy back into our practice. If we gain the energy through investigation, we can continue the investigation. It's really just the, I think of it as the engine almost of our practice. Does that answer your question? I'm not.
Yes.
So we have a couple of minutes left, and what I'd like to do with this time is to do a little bit of a reflective practice on this quality of effort and energy. And this kind of a reflective practice is interesting. It's an interesting tool. It's not a mindfulness practice, but it's a way to explore a topic in a meditative fashion. So the technique is to let yourself settle, and you can do this on your own. And what you do is you pick a topic that you want to explore in a meditative way, and you bring a phrase into mind. Know how you want to ask yourself that question. And it could just simply be distilled into a single word. And then you get yourself into a meditative state, spend a few minutes relaxing, paying attention to the breath, letting yourself get settled into a meditative state. And then you drop the word into the meditation. And then you don't think about it, but you see what response happens. What happens in the body? What happens? It may trigger thoughts. It may trigger physical reactions. It may trigger emotions. Just notice what happens to you. And then let go. Don't try not to chain off on any of that, but just keep coming back to the word and then what bubbles up from that. It's a really interesting way to allow our deeper consciousness to arise around a particular topic. So for this practice, we're going to sit quietly for a couple of minutes, and then I'm going to drop a word or two into your sitting. So I'm going to pick the word for tonight. So let yourself get settled into a comfortable posture. And take a couple of long, slow, deep breaths. And let your breathing return to normal. And let yourself just settle and rest for a moment on the sensations of breathing in and breathing out. And after a few moments of silence, I will suggest a word for you to reflect on. energy. Energy. So we have a minute or so. Is anybody willing to share what happened? This can be a way of exploring our relationship to various things. So I'm just curious if anybody experienced a shift or...
My first experience was pain in the side of my head. I just had energy. And then this feeling of like trying too hard.
Mm.
Then you said, the second time you said energy, I was peaceful. It resolved itself.
Interesting. Yeah. It's a very interesting exploration, this kind of reflection. You can do it over a period of time. And not necessarily try to come to any conclusions about what you experience. It's just like each time you gather a little bit of information. And then what I tend to do in this kind of a practice is I'll work with something for a couple of weeks and make notes after a reflective period. And then I'll go back over it after a couple of weeks. And then I'll start to think about it. But I'll just let the experience be what it is for a while. And... Yeah, so it's interesting what happened. There's no need to make a particular conclusion about it. But it's, you know, in this moment that was your relationship. The other interesting piece about this, I think, is did everybody have some kind of a shift, or I mean, was there something that happened? Did anybody not have anything happen? What I find interesting about this is that it really shows the power of the mind, because it's just a word. It's just a word, and then there can be a range of experience that happens because a word was dropped in. And it really shows how much our thoughts direct how we feel. And if we can direct our attention in a particular way, more towards the wholesome, it can direct our experience in a more wholesome way. So I'd love to hear more from you, but it is 9 after 9, so we do need to stop. And thank you very much for your attention and your participation. Mm-hmm.